Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Good morning to you. It's Wednesday, August 25th, 2021. I'm Gail King. That's Anthony Mason. That's Tony DeCopel.
Welcome to CBS This Morning. We begin with the crisis in Afghanistan, where there are now just 6 days left to withdraw Americans and Afghan allies of the U.S. Thousands are leaving the country's main airport every day, but many more are still waiting. President Biden reaffirmed his intention to pull out by August 31st, but is asking the military for plans to deal with any disruptions. Meanwhile, a surprise visit to the Afghan capital by two members of Congress has angered U.S. officials. They call it selfish and a danger for American forces. Ed O'Keefe is at the White House. Ed, good morning.
Good morning, Anthony. The White House tells us that U.S. and allied forces have evacuated more than 19,000 people from Afghanistan in just the past 24 hours. But even President Biden now admits that the longer the U.S. stays, the greater the risk of a terrorist attack on American forces.
The sooner we can finish, the better. Each day of operations brings added risk to our troops.
President Biden intends to stick to his August 31st deadline to pull U.S. troops out of Afghanistan, but admits that could change.
I've asked the Pentagon and the State Department for contingency plans to adjust the timetable, should that become necessary.
Risks include tenuous cooperation from the Taliban and possible terrorist attacks.
Every day we're on the ground is another day we know that ISIS-K is seeking to target the airport and attack both U.S. and allied forces and innocent civilians.
Just hours earlier, the president met with G7 leaders, some of whom urged him to keep American forces at the Kabul airport longer.
Don't pick the date. Solve the problem.
And as evacuations continue, two members of Congress made an unauthorized trip to Kabul Tuesday, unleashing a flurry of criticism that they simply created a distraction and took up seats for evacuating U.S. citizens and allies. Representatives Seth Moulton and Peter Meyer, both veterans, said in a statement, "We came into this visit wanting, like most veterans, to push the president to extend the August 31st deadline. After talking with commanders on the ground and seeing the situation here, it's obvious that because we started the evacuation so late that no matter what we do, we won't get everyone out on time."
We are remain committed to getting any and all Americans that want to leave, to get them out.
Pentagon officials insist time will be needed to actually withdraw U.S. forces.
You need at least several days to get the amount of forces and equipment that we have at the airport, to get that safely and effectively retrograded.
As for that controversial congressional trip to Kabul, it was unauthorized because they didn't go through the usual process to get approval for a congressional fact-finding mission. Representative Moulton is a Democrat from Massachusetts. Representative Meyer is a Republican from Michigan. They say they kept their trip secret in order to keep the controversy low and not to draw any attention to themselves. They also claim they only rode on crew seats in and out of Afghanistan so as to not take seats from Americans or others that are going to or coming from Afghanistan. But the White House and other administration officials swinging back this morning. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki tells CBS News, "We advise against any Americans, whether elected or not, attempting to travel to Kabul right now. The focus must continue to be evacuating American citizens and our Afghan partners." The president's getting another security update on the situation in Afghanistan this morning, and we're expected, Tony, to hear from the Secretary of State a little later about the details of the ongoing evacuation.
Yeah, the president can't be happy about that visit from two members of Congress. Ed, thank you very much. The Taliban are now blocking Afghans from getting to Kabul's airport, and they say it is due to security concerns and because the country needs those people to stay and help rebuild. The first stop for thousands of Afghan refugees is Ramstein Air Base that's near Frankfurt, Germany. And Holly Williams is there, where she spoke to some of those refugees getting out, and she joins us now. Holly, good morning.
The Afghan evacuees arrive here with just one small bag of possessions. And inside, they carry the anxiety of an uncertain future and the heartbreak of losing their country to Islamic extremists.
In central Germany, an Afghan village has sprung up almost overnight. At this giant US military airbase, service members are doing their best to calm and entertain thousands of evacuees. Adina Ghafouri told us she worked for an American organization in Kabul and feared the Taliban would kill her, but she had to leave her parents behind.
I don't know, am I able to see them again or not? Am I able to talk with them or not? Am I able to go in a safe place or not? We don't know anything.
This is just a way station for the Afghan evacuees. They'll stay here a few days before flying elsewhere, very likely the US, to start a new life. There's one thing, though, they all have in common. They may never see their homeland again.
It's sad.
Lieutenant Colonel Simon Ritchie is an Air Force doctor from Minneapolis who's helping the evacuation effort.
Their entire life possessions might be in a plastic shopping bag. It certainly helps to put things in perspective and what it means to have good fortune of being born in a country like America.
Well, if the Taliban
Rahmat Safari worked as an interpreter for US Special Forces.
What would the Taliban have done to you?
They're going to kill me right away.
He told us his family owe their lives to a Green Beret who became a friend.
His name is Greg Adam. He's back in the United States. He helped us a lot.
Major Greg Adams is now a civilian. From his home in Seattle, he remotely guided Rahmat and other Afghan interpreters through the chaos at Kabul's airport using text messages.
I know how many risks they've taken for us while serving overseas, and I really want to see through our moral obligation, my personal obligation, but also our country's obligation.
Adams risked his life to fight the Taliban and is critical of America's hasty and disordered withdrawal from Afghanistan.
I don't necessarily question the decision to leave. I think we could have done a lot better job of planning for this and getting people out.
Rahmat Safari told us his ambitions now are to find work and live peacefully. He hopes in Sacramento. Greg Adams says he's still working to evacuate around 20 more Afghans before August 31st.
It's quite a story with Major Greg Adams. Thank you very much, Holly Williams, reporting from Ramstein Air Base. She's in Germany. The Supreme Court has ordered the Biden administration to reinstate a Trump-era border policy, forcing migrants to remain in Mexico while they seek asylum in the United States. Now, the court denied the White House's request to continue a suspension of that program, saying the administration did not provide an adequate reason to get rid of it. Since the start of the summer, the U.S. allowed 13,000 asylum seekers to stay in this country while they pursue their cases.
President Biden's domestic agenda is getting a big boost from Congress. Last night, the House voted to advance several of the president's top priorities, including a more than $3 trillion budget framework and a voting rights bill. Lawmakers also set a date for a vote on rebuilding the nation's infrastructure. Nicole Killian is on Capitol Hill to unpack it all. Nicole, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Anthony. And that deal almost fell apart after some resistance from moderate Democrats. But for now, the president's Build Back Better agenda appears to be on track. The House approved a $3.5 trillion budget outline that will be used to craft a broad package with many of the president's key initiatives, from expanded child care to education, climate change, and other social programs. It also sets up a vote on a $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill by by September 27th. That was a concession to moderates who wanted a vote now. Lawmakers also passed the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, named after the late Georgia congressman. The bill would restore provisions in the 1965 Voting Rights Act that were struck down by the Supreme Court. It faces an uphill battle in the Senate, where many Republican leaders have expressed opposition. As for that massive budget package, Democrats hope to pass it next month alone, but some senators are balking at the price tag and have threatened not to support it. Tony?
We'll keep tracking it. Nicole, thank you very much. U.S. officials are investigating a health scare involving American diplomats in Vietnam. Vice President Kamala Harris's trip to the country was delayed by several hours after Americans in Hanoi came down with a mystery illness, possibly related to the so-called Havana syndrome. CBS News has learned at least one diplomat had to be medevaced out of Vietnam. Havana syndrome is the name given to a set of symptoms first reported by U.S. personnel in Cuba back in 2016. Doctors do not fully understand it, but they believe it has made hundreds of American officials sick all around the world.
And talking about getting sick, there is breaking news in the pandemic. Johnson & Johnson says a booster shot of its single-dose vaccine sharply increases antibody levels against the virus. In the meantime, cases in children have surged over the last month from around 38,000 at the end of July to more than 180,000 last week. That's according to the American Academy of Pediatrics. In Mississippi, the governor has called about 1,000 extra healthcare workers. He's called them in to reinforce 61 short-staffed hospitals there. Mark Strassman is in Jackson with more on the story. Mark, good morning. This is very troubling.
Very troubling, Gail. Good morning to you. This is St. Dominic's Hospital in Jackson, clobbered by COVID the last 5 weeks. All 64 ICU beds are full, more than half by COVID patients. This week, they're setting up that tent you see behind me to screen and test overflow patients for the virus. But one of the most worrisome trends throughout this state is the Delta variant's impact on kids.
3 weeks into Mississippi's school year, COVID's toll on kids is staggering. Almost 12,000 students have tested positive, with nearly 29,000 now quarantined. Sadder still, Michaela Robinson's COVID story.
That was my only daughter, my only child.
Justin Waddell is Michaela's father. The 13-year-old eighth grader started feeling sick on Wednesday, August 11th. She died from COVID that Saturday.
We never seen nothing happen like this in 3 days. It was a shock to everybody, the whole family.
In Mississippi, barely one of every three people has been fully vaccinated, the country's second lowest state rate.
I have no intention of issuing a vaccine mandate, period.
Governor Tate Reeves also opposes mask mandates, even in schools, despite a COVID surge that has alarmed many parents and doctors. Pediatrician Dr. Anita Henderson works at the Hattiesburg Clinic. She describes COVID's impact on kids here as a freight train.
And what I mean by a freight train is our clinics are overrun.
And what would you say to people who say, they're young, they'll be fine?
We're seeing that in our pediatric population, kids who can't play the flute anymore, kids who can't participate in sports anymore. And that's heartbreaking.
Worrisome to Henderson, more than half of this state's 82 counties have no pediatricians. Little Shelby Davian got lucky. She spent nearly 2 weeks in the ICU after developing multi-infection syndrome for children, a rare but dangerous condition that can appear after a COVID-19 infection.
The staff told us she's a miracle, that she was that sick and that she was one of the worst they had seen.
This hospital is among those getting the governor's reinforcements. 20 paramedics could show up as soon as today to help screen and test COVID patients. But what this hospital could use, like all hospitals throughout this state, is a break from this viral siege. Anthony?
Yeah, as Dr. Henderson said, COVID is a freight train. Thank you, Mark. The president has declared a disaster in Northern California because of dozens of destructive wildfires. One of them threatens to reach Lake Tahoe, which hasn't had a wildfire in 14 years. The Caldor Fire has burned more than 120,000 acres, destroyed more than 400 homes, and threatens 17,000 other structures. Smoke from the fire has settled over nearby Reno, Nevada, forcing school cancellations, closing parks, and disrupting air traffic at the local airport.
The first full day of the Paralympics began overnight in Tokyo. More than 4,000 athletes are competing in the only city to ever host two Paralympic Games. More than 20 events are scheduled, including the first competitions in taekwondo and badminton. But as Lucy Kraft reports, the competitors will not hear the cheers of a roaring crowd because the pandemic has entered a dangerous new phase.
The Paralympics opening ceremony was an artsy, technicolor celebration, with disabled performers headlining the event, a joyous tribute to empowerment. Missing from the traditional parade of athletes were two competitors from Afghanistan, unable to get to Tokyo after the Taliban took over their home country earlier this month. A Japanese volunteer carried their flag instead. As with the Olympics, athletes in the 13-day Paralympics will compete in mostly empty stadiums due to COVID safety protocols. The event's message of positivity was hard to embrace as Japan's medical system buckles under the weight of the coronavirus pandemic.
More than 90% of ICU beds here in Tokyo are filled. With less than half of Japanese vaccinated, the Delta variant is sending case numbers to new highs. Nationwide, new cases have skyrocketed more than 400% since the start of the Olympic Games.
I would say the internal frustration and anger, and most of all, worry and anxiety is definitely reaching its peak.
Today, the government expanded the state of emergency, placing most of the country under COVID restrictions. But with many residents ignoring the government's urging to limit outings, it's unclear when the country will be able to get some relief from the pandemic. For CBS This Morning, Lucy Kraft, Tokyo.
Thank you for listening to the CBS This Morning podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to get daily podcast originals.
You can watch the CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station or live on the CBS All Access app.
When you're committed to raising the standard, you're bound to ruffle some feathers. At Happy Egg, we like to say we farm differently. But in reality, we produce eggs the way people used to, by partnering with local small family farmers who raise our happy hens on 8 or more acres. Because in our opinion, farming shouldn't be complicated. It should be happy. Choose happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.